as a teenager from California coming into belly dance, what was profound for me was this shift of how I viewed my body and what is ideal femininity. And my ideas around that have shifted radically from my upbringing to belly dance to Odissi and now living in India for over 20 years.
Hello everyone, you're listening to the Belly Dance Life podcast. I'm your host Jana Komarnitska and I'm thrilled to share a new portion of dance inspiration with you. If you are a new listener, welcome to the show. Don't forget to subscribe and receive automatic updates about our new episodes. And if you are our regular listener, welcome back. Please leave your reviews on whichever app you're listening. They really help me promote the show and spread awareness about belly dance art form. Plus, I really like hearing back from you. On this note, let's get to our today's episode. Embark on a journey of passion and possibility with Jelena and Belly Dance Evolution. Join them in creating magic as part of the Jungle Book cast or immerse yourself in growth through the BDE Experience Intensive. Let BDE guide you to your fullest potential. Your dreams are within reach. Details are available at joinbde.com. It's joinbde.com. Link in the show notes. I hope you are ready for this because today we have amazing Colina Shakti as our guest at the Belly Dance Life podcast. Trained extensively in Odissi classical dance and well-versed in many styles of dance from India and beyond, Colina lives an artistic path steeped in rich tradition. Yoga, aesthetics, and related philosophies are an integral part of her holistic vision of art, inspiring her to bridge timeless values with modern expression. She has performed for former president of India, royal families across Rajasthan, Indian embassy at Cairo, in different temple and arts festivals from Japan to Australia. Colina is the founder and director of Shakti School of Dance located in Temple in Pushkar, Rajasthan region of India, where she also annually produces the Pushkar Temple Dance Festival. Recently, she has added a summer school program and retreat center at Villa Shakti Crete in Greece and launched online curriculum at her virtual school. In our today's episode, we will talk about the very beginning of Colina's dance journey, how she discovered belly dance and how she discovered later Odissi dance style and how she fell in love with both of them. We also will talk about differences and similarities of these two dance forms and specifically the journey of exploring femininity through them and how different and similar they are in each own way. We talk about Indian fusion dance and Colina gives some very nice tips and suggestions for those of you who are interested in doing some sort of belly dance fusions with Indian style, or these tips can apply to basically fusions with any other dance styles too. And we talked about her own training years in India and how 1 year going to study in India led her to basically live there for over 20 years so far. You also will discover how you can learn from Colina and some exciting opportunities if you can travel to India or Greece. But also for those of you who are not able to travel, there are some options online too. So all this and more in our today's episode. I always ask and encourage you, don't forget to screenshot and share it with your friends. This is the easiest and the best way how you can support this project, which is available for you on all major platforms absolutely for free. You can listen to all these amazing guests, learn from them, and this is the greatest way also to show your appreciation to people, to artists and professionals who come and share their experience and their knowledge here with you. So, on this note, let's start. Hello, dear Colina. Welcome to the Belly Dance Life podcast. As I mentioned, it's such a delight to start this day with having you as a guest on the podcast. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I would like to start
with the first question from the very beginning of your dance journey, because actually you have such a rich experience and rich dance explorations and dance career that it, like I want to sort of go first to the very beginning and maybe even before your dance started. That's I'm not sure, but I have a very curious question. I'm very curious to know if you don't mind sharing a little bit about your childhood. Were there any signals, any signs that you will get into dancing and specifically you will fall in love so much with Indian culture and Indian dance?
That's a very good question. And the answer is no, I had no idea. I mean, I grew up in California. And my parents, even my sister, are more academics. I would say definitely not artists. We always knew I was an artist. I was a little different, but it wasn't until I discovered belly dance when I went to university that that I really knew I wanted to be a dancer and I wanted to engage with dance. I always thought it would be maybe visual arts before I settled in dance, but no, it kind of came as a surprise.
And how did ballet dance enter your life?
So I was in university. I was studying dance and anthropology, and there was a belly dance class. I saw a flyer for a belly dance class, so I just immediately fell in love from the first class, and that was really the first style of dance that pulled me into my body, I guess, into this love affair with my own body and experiencing culture through my body. I think, growing up, I had done ballet and tap dance and jazz, kind of just as an after-school activity, but it was so profound when I experienced a different culture through my body, like feeling different rhythms in my body and just exploring a different view of the body that's so apparent when you step outside of kind of the more typical dance forms that you find in the US where I was growing up. So belly dance, was the gateway into dance and culture, and so it became really clear from the beginning that it was the combination of the two. It wasn't just any dance form, but it was a dance form that could take me into another view of life, of the world around me, of interacting with other people through dance, interacting with rhythms, and just how the body can be used.
And back then, when you started taking ballet dance classes, was it more like a traditional classical, I don't know, maybe Egyptian or Turkish style, or was it already some kind of fusion ballet dance classes? So what was that in the very beginning?
Yeah, that's also a good question. So it was, let's just say it was a fusion. It was my first teacher, she was really quite a hippie. And she kind of just every class she would say, just let go, just dance, just, like it was about letting go. And it wasn't a lot of technique. So it was American cabaret style, I guess. She had learned from Jamila Salempour and kind of just brought her own, I don't know, kind of hippie viewpoints into it. So, it was definitely a mix. That was my initial touch with belly dance. But then pretty much right away, I just fell in love with Arabic music and the music that she was playing in class, and I wanted to learn more about it. And I was studying anthropology in school, so I just started my research into traditional dances from mostly from Egypt. It has always been for me like this anchor in Egyptian culture and folkloric dances in Egypt. So then I started to study folkloric dance and also exploring other dances of the Middle Eastern world. I mean, also touching in with like Persian dance and Moroccan music and dance. So my interest started shifting that way, but obviously it was difficult in the, back in those days, there was no internet. And it, just the access that we had back then to studying a dance like that, you know, a traditional dance, a folkloric dance, was very limited, very difficult to get access, very difficult to find recordings, you know, video footage, even photographs of traditional dances. But whatever resources I could piece together, that was kind of how I started my interest in dance research.
And you mentioned that you start exploring not only dances of Egypt, but other cultures, including like Persia and Morocco. And I assume at some point, eventually, it led you to discovering Indian culture and Indian dance too. But how many, I don't know, maybe months or maybe years were you focused primarily on ballet dance before you got so involved in Indian dance?
So it definitely, like, I hadn't, at this point in the story, I hadn't met Indian dance yet. I hadn't really met anything Indian, really. So after 2 or 3 years of belly dance and kind of focused in all the music, you know, belly dance is such a broad term and this kind of fusion term. So that actually at that time was an umbrella term for so many musical and dance traditions across the world, really. And so I was sort of in that space for a little over 2 years. And then it was in a class in my university, the class was called Dances of Asia, and it was a survey of different traditional dance forms, you know, everything from Kabuki theater to Javanese dance. And then finally, we kind of traveled to India. We started to cover all the different classical forms. At that time, there were only 7 classical dance forms. Now, a few more have been added to the list. So studying all the different classical dance forms of India. And then finally, we arrived at Odissi. And I really can't explain why, but from the first moment I saw a photograph of an Odissi dancer, I just kind of spoke out in the classroom. I said, I want to do this dance. This is my dance. And so it was love at first sight. And I just became obsessed with finding Odissi, because really at that point it was about finding it. There was one book in our university library about Odissi, and I had a hard time studying anything because I kept going back to that book and just looking at it again and again. And, you know, something about the serenity, the sophistication, the air of spirituality, the refinement, the beauty of the dancer's poise and costume and the mudras and the whole ambiance around it. I just, I didn't have words for it, but it really, it drew me in.
So interesting. By the way, do you remember your very first dance class, actual practical dance class in Odissi style? And how did you feel? Like, do you feel that your previous ballet dance training helped you? Or was it something that you had to let go and try to relearn certain movement patterns?
Yeah, it's certainly, well, I'll tell you, so I explained my first belly dance teacher, and kind of her philosophy was this let go and kind of toss your hair and just melt into the music, which was profound for me at that time. It's kind of the absence of technique. So, but at a certain point, I was so in love with belly dance, I became frustrated because I wanted to become a better dancer, but there was no methodology. There was no scaffolding structure of how I could progress through some kind of pedagogy, like what actually is the technique and what, you know, all these things that that are quite common now, I would say, in most belly dance workshops. You know, the teacher presents a technique. And somehow in the 90s, where I was at in the US, there wasn't anyone really presenting a strong technique. This is kind of the birth of ATS, American Tribal Style, and Suhela was definitely teaching, but it hadn't really spread outside of her kind of smaller community. So I was getting frustrated that there was no technique in belly dance, and that gave me an extra push, an extra interest in immediately in the first class of ODC. I could understand how incredibly technical the dance form is. So yeah, my first class, like anyone's first Indian classical dance class, is extremely awkward. You just feel like you have no control because Indian classical dance demands so much on the nervous system, with the mudras, with the eyes, with kind of contrasting movements and movement qualities happening at once. S similar in belly dance. I mean, now we find a lot of belly dance technique broken down as isolations, but even in the 90s, that wasn't really a term that you heard so much in a classroom, this idea of isolations. So we have isolated body parts moving in opposing directions in Odissi. So maybe it helped a little bit, but honestly, not so much because it's just a very different demand on the body. But I did have, I'll never forget my first Odissi class. I sort of approached my belly dance practice as, like so many people, especially in this kind of earlier days of belly dance in the US, belly dance became an emblem of a feminist movement, this movement back to our female body and away from the kind of Barbie style body or something that, you know, I grew up around Los Angeles in the 80s, and that's this kind of the kind of body that was presented to me growing up. So belly dance, as it was sort of taken up by many feminists, presented this different comfort level with the curves of our body and whatnot. And so that kind of blew my mind as a rebellious young teenager. And so then I arrived to the Odissi class, and I was coming from this rebelliousness because of my age, but also I just tend to be that way anyway. But and this kind of not wanting to be fit into, you know, a ballet body or into this mode of thinking, that's a, you know, just a Western way of looking at dance and the possibilities of dance. So in this Odissi class, the teacher asked us in the first movement that we learned to bow our head down to the floor and put our forehead on the floor, bowing in front of Lord Ganesh. And to me, I had a big problem with that. You know, I had no association with any Eastern culture where bowing is a tradition. So this feeling, this idea of bowing before someone or something was very foreign to me. And I had this kind of inner reaction, this visceral reaction of no, I'm not going to bow down before anyone. And everyone else in the class was bowing. So I decided, okay, I'll try this, I'll do it. And when I bowed my head to the floor in surrender, in this gesture of surrender in front of some divine entity, I just had a really profound experience, physically, mentally, emotionally. Just my eyes were filled with tears, and it was a really profound moment, like this first moment that I had been asked to find surrender and to act it out. And that is the trigger of my journey in Odissi, this idea of acting out pretty big concepts like surrender in front of God, whatever that means to the individual, but this process of acting out great philosophies, great spiritual philosophies and ideas within the ethos of Sanatana Dharma, the ethos around Odissi and Indian classical dance, but to physically act it out, even if maybe I didn't emotionally, spiritually, mentally understand it yet, but to go through the act again and again until I did understand it, has been the profound part of the journey in Odissi, the transformative part of the journey.
Thank you for sharing. It's really interesting to hear how we can sometimes bring certain awareness about any subject from our mind or from our heart into body. But it's also interesting to hear how sometimes through our body we can gain some understanding or some feeling or some experience which is more emotional or more spiritual level rather than just physical level. So thank you for sharing this. I honestly don't know that much about Odissi dancing. Like I never took any class, but Odissi, from what I know and from what I understand, it's a lot about spirituality. And it's also, if I'm not mistaken here, it's a lot about still exploring femininity and feminine style from different format than belly dance. It's through also a lot of discipline and a lot of strict movement, both freedom and I guess limits, like restraints of like the movements have to be very specific, but it is also exploring feminine side of it. And it kind of, from what I was reading, it has a connection to previous temple dances, which at some point were banned, but they also had an element of exploring love stories or like some elements of sensuality. Can you share a little bit about that and explore? Because you were talking about exploration of femininity through belly dance. How is it in Indian dances and specifically in classical Odissi dance?
Yeah, it's a good question, and I'm going to try to apply that restraint that you brought up, because if I start talking about Odissi, I can just open up the subject. It's a fascinating subject and has so many, historical and philosophical aspects that there's a lot to describe. So I'll try to keep it brief because I know we want to focus on belly dance too, but kind of the crux of, I don't know, aesthetically where I find the link between belly dance and Odissi, and what it means to me is that, as you pointed out, this exploration of the feminine. And also, as I mentioned in my own journey, like, as a teenager from California coming into belly dance, what was profound for me was this shift of how I viewed my body and what is ideal femininity. And my ideal femininity, my ideas around that have shifted radically from my upbringing to belly dance, to Odissi, and now living in India for over 20 years. It's, my ideas of femininity and how I present my body and my own femininity has just really radically shifted. So for me, the connection between Odissi and belly dance is the exploration of the feminine. And that's what interests me about it. Odissi, when you watch a performance of Odissi, so from the audience perspective, Odissi is definitely, I would say, one of the most feminine of all the classical Indian styles, if not all the Indian styles of dance. And there's very specific reasons for that. So I'll try to point out a few kind of examples of where that might come from. Mainly in the technique of the dance, we have several postures of the body, which are defined by how the center line of the body is held. So standing, like many of us also practice yoga, so in samasthiti, we call it samabhanga, just standing straight, the center line is straight. So if we sit down and bend the knees and push the torso, push the rib cage to one side and then deflect the head to the other side, we have what we call tripangi. And tripangi means thrice bent center line, referring to the bends of the center line. So basically you're creating an S curve through the center line of the body. And our entire dance is based on that posture and oppositional movement to enhance the bends of the center line. So when someone is standing in this kind of S curve position, I mean, immediately you could imagine so many belly dance moments where you can see this S curve as well. But our entire dance, Odissi, is based on enhancing that S curve, and that the S curve of the center line evokes kind of a meltedness, a surrender, a romanticness, definitely femininity. It's enhancing the curves, the natural curves of the body, of the hips, of the breast and the torso. It highlights the neck, which is also a very sensuous place of the body, because we have these, you know, specific neck movements. We use a glance, we call it a sidelong glance of the eyes. So looking from the what's considered the most beautiful part of the eye, the very corner, outer corner of the eye. So we use this sidelong glance. And the whole technique kind of builds up around this sensuous posture. If you actually do Odissi, the feeling of doing Odissi is very different from watching Odissi, because we also have very strong footwork. And to slap your foot and get a noise out of slapping your foot and the bells that we wear on the ankle, it's a very vigorous, very strenuous task. And so you actually feel like you're a sweaty monster running a marathon. You don't feel like this little nymph as it looks. It should look very light and very flowing and sensuous, but it feels very vigorous. So I always think that's kind of interesting to point out. But technically, Odissi enhances the curves of the female body. Although men do practice Odissi, and the technique doesn't change when a man does it, but you can see how men dance in Odissi. It's very feminine, what we would kind of generally classify as feminine. In fact, there's a tradition closely linked with Odissi of Gotipoas, and these are young prepubescent boys who dress as women and do this dance. So this dance is invoking the history of, as you pointed out, the temple dancers who in the regional language Odia, they were called Mahari, also known as Devadasi. So these women used to dance in front of the altar in the temple of Lord Jagannath in Odisha. And these women were ritually married to Lord Jagannath. So when they performed their dance, it was an intimate act of devotion for their husband. And that's how they describe it in historical record and how they would describe what the performance was. It was not a performance for an audience. It was a performance for their most intimate beloved, Lord Jagannath, who they also referred to as their husband. So in this context, you can imagine the atmosphere and the mood of the dance and why there's an element of sensuality. So it's kind of a big topic, but just quickly pointing out, within the ethos of particularly the Gaudiya Vaishnav tradition, so a spiritual lineage that is connected with the Jagannath temple, the view of the devotee's relationship to God is one that absolutely can also be expressed through sensuality. So we perform a lot of romantic poetry. I think you also mentioned that There's a lot of romantic poetry and romantic pastimes of Radha and Krishna, the ultimate devotee and her lord. So that romance between Radha and Krishna is a favorite topic for Odissi choreography. So it's an incredible task that our gurus undertook to present in a very traditional Hindu conservative religious context, to act out basically romance and making love between Radha and Krishna. It's very romantic and very erotic, even poetry. So it's also, you find this in Sufi poetry, the lover and the beloved. Rumi also talks about that. Hafiz also invokes that analogy. So it's not only restricted to this tradition, but this idea of the lover and the beloved, the devotee and the Lord. And so our dance developed to express that longing and that desire, which we also feel as humans, but it's invoking that higher desire, the spiritual desire. Mm-hmm. So that philosophy, that ethos, is deeply embedded within the dance, and it has affected what, you know, what our choreographies are, the topics of our choreographies. So kind of with all of that put together, there is a lot of sensuality, femininity, romance within Odissi that shows through the technique and the posturing. But it is, you know, in the context of Odissi, it is invoking this higher love, the love of God, much like Sufi poetry. So Odissi can definitely be described as feminine and sensuous. And I would say, you know, in my own impressions of belly dance, kind of the unique features of belly dance and all that fits under that umbrella term, belly dance is absolutely sensuous and absolutely has a femininity distinct in the technique. And I'm not saying, you know, only the female gender can perform it, not at all, but one of the qualities of the dance that is unique is how femininity is really presented in the forefront. And so for me, when I draw a fusion, and when the fusion, I should say, just naturally happened, because eventually in my story, I kind of go back to belly dance. Mm-hmm. When I went back to belly dance, everybody in my belly dance class looked at me and said, "Oh, wow, you're doing Indian fusion." And I didn't mean to, but after you do such an intensive training for so many years in a classical form, I mean, where you're really repeating and very vigorous training, it stays in your, you know, in your cells, in your blood. So going back to belly dance, I brought with me the poise that I learned of presenting sensuality, but with that secret knowing that it was sensuality with this, like we can just say a romance with God, as the Sufi would put, or as the poetry of Radha and Krishna. So that has a different poise than a sensuality that is presented for entertainment or for the audience. And so I did it unintentionally in the beginning, but now I'm very aware of it. And it's very much a choice that I've made, that there's some inner poetry happening that I believe in and I connect with and I want to keep with me. And that inner poetry is what directs my choices in fusion, and I feel gives a different atmosphere around the femininity and the sensuality that is inherent in belly dance.
When you mentioned that you came back to ballet dance class and you start naturally doing this Indian ballet dance like sort of fusion, do you mean that it was right away when you start taking Odissi classes and you were possibly continuing ballet dance classes and this sort of mix naturally started occurring? Or did you take some break from studying extensively like ballet dance and you focused on Indian classes, dance classes, and then at some point you were sort of called to come back to ballet dance class.
It's good to point this out. So somehow in my journey, we like just coming back to when I was in university, it happened pretty quick after I said I found that book in the library and there was no internet. So it's not like I could just look up an Odissi class or someone to study with in India. But not so long after that, through a series of connections, I bought a one-way ticket to India. And I was 21 years old. It was in 2001. And I got on that flight to India and I thought to myself, and I told my mother, I'm going to India. I'm going to learn this dance for 1 year. And I thought, then I'm going to come back and, probably teach classes in it or, be able to at least do it. And, if anyone has encountered any classical dance form, you realize that's just a ridiculous, uninformed idea I had in my head. So I came to India to train in Odissi, and that's what I did. The first year I was in Odisha, training every day, all day, with all Odia youngsters. It was a lot of young boys in my class, so it was extremely rigorous training. And also at that time, nobody spoke English, so there was no explanation whatsoever. I mean, I was doing it, but my ability to communicate with my teacher and with the other students was literally at the most minimal level. So those were some pretty hard years, the first few years. And I trained in Odissi. Also at that time, so just being an outsider, a foreigner, didn't speak the language, I felt so awkward, so uncomfortable. All my concepts of reality challenged because suddenly I was living a very, very traditional Odia life of a classical dancer. I needed a break from that intensity, and I took a trip to the other side of India from Odisha, which is in East India. I took a trip to Western India to Rajasthan, where I live today, and I was interested to find the Kalvelia community and learn their dance. So Kalvelia are, at that time, they were still quite semi-nomadic or nomadic people, snake charmers, and they have this beautiful dance, very tribal, very free, improvised folk dance form. And so I came to Rajasthan to research that dance and to learn the dance. So I took breaks from the intensity of that training life in the, we call it in a Gurukul system, very traditional manner, apprentice style learning with the guru, where, it's a lot of time invested and it's not necessarily always classes that you're getting, but the concept is just to be with the master and to serve the master. And absorb the dance life, not just the technique, but the entire life of the dancer. So, after a couple years of that, I also needed to breathe out of this traditional life that I suddenly started to live. So I would always come back to the US and visit my family. And those were times when I might take a break from the intense training of Odissi, and then come back to a belly dance class or come back to my belly dance practice. So I've always had like periods of the year that I focus more on training or creation, like choreographing and performing. So I want to be more of a student than a teacher. I mean, I love to be a student. I also love to be a teacher, but I think to be a good teacher, you have to be a good student and know what it is to be a student. And there's just so much to learn about dance and about tradition and music. And so I try to balance, you know, my time of performing and teaching with really intense studies. So I still study today Odissi and, you know, take a belly dance class with someone who inspires me. But yeah, it was the way Odissi technique was absorbed into my body is only because of the duration of time. I want to point out classical training, it's like learning to play the piano. There's a time duration that's needed for the integration. And sometimes fusion dancers think you can just take a workshop and throw a mudra in there and then it's Indian fusion. And I really disagree because it's very artificial. It's not understood. I mean, a dancer who understands and has integrated the movement presents something very different from, you know, all of us, the first day we walk into a class of a dance in a different style, we're still a little bit awkward in the movement. So it's only over a long duration of time that femininity and that poise of Odissi really seeped into my being, and not only my body, but also my mind, just how I view art and what my ethics and values are. Really makes a huge difference in how that form is integrated.
You know, it's so interesting to hear your story. I just have a little comment that sometimes having that a little bit of this naivety, like you went for 1 year to study and you thought you'll come back and teach, and that led you to basically to 20 years, more than 20 years of life in India, discovering all different styles. And you today have your own school, so famous school in India, in a temple, as far as I know. And you organize so many events and connect so many people through different cultures who want to learn a little bit more about both Indian dance and about their femininity and the different aesthetics, physical, spiritual, emotional. So it's just so interesting that sometimes this lack of full knowledge, of full awareness allows us to step somewhere that maybe if you knew from beginning how hard it would be, maybe you would not even take that flight. Who knows?
I definitely would not have. It's a good point. Yeah, and really, I'm sure that's been the inspiration behind opening my school. And I just produced this big festival on Rajasthani dance. So my incredible struggle to reach these art forms, and I can really even say some of it is just the suffering behind it, like these years of kind of, you know, having just very awkward times of training in Orissa, not really understanding the language and the culture. I enjoy being a bridge for people and making it a little bit more, not a little bit, a hugely more accessible and broken down and kind of not wasting time. Like, because I really believe now I'm at the point, I have received so much from these traditions, and I'm very much a traditionalist in the sense that I love and respect and worship lineage. It's a huge part of the dance culture in India is to, you know, is to be loyal to lineage and to uplift lineage, and really the value that I want my lineage of Odissi to be renowned and appreciated more than myself as an individual. And so how can I feed back into that? How can I make my lineage stronger? How can I, you know, I arrived to Rajasthan and nobody would teach me Rajasthani dance, and just completely unheard of for someone to from outside to pick up Rajasthani folk dance. And I immediately, when I saw it, I just felt, this is so beautiful. Like, how is it that belly dance became famous around the world and not Rajasthani dance?
Mm-hmm.
And so my goal is really to leave the tradition stronger, healthier, and better than when I found it. And that's my responsibility, because I've gotten so much from the people and the culture of Rajasthan, the traditions of Rajasthan and Odissi and my lineage, that the world needs these art forms because they offer something so unique and so beautiful, and so really soul stirring, that it's my mission to feed that energy back. And if that means being a bridge through producing festivals and running a school, then I'm happy to serve that cause, because I have gotten so much from these traditions that they deserve my service, my dedication.
Wow. Well, speaking about being a bridge, I am pretty sure that you have a lot of dancers, a lot of students reaching to you who would be interested in learning, or who are interested in learning or doing some sort of Indian fusion belly dance thing. But maybe those students, I'm pretty sure you have some people who have not really much experience, or maybe even zero experience in Indian dance style. So they come from belly dance, let's say, background, and they want to explore something, and there is this sort of stereotypical system in ballet dance world, like you take workshop, you learn choreography, you perform it on stage, etc., etc. So when you encounter those kind of students who want to study this style, specific fusion style, with you, or in general they want to do it but maybe more thoughtfully do it rather than just learning the sequence of movements, what is maybe the most common, typical, I don't know, advice or approach that you share with them so that they can do it more in depth and more thoughtfully, but at the same time knowing it's not the people who can, let's say, move to India and study Odissi dance for years and years and years. How people who come from ballet dance background and want to explore, do something, how they can do it even with limited resources maybe of studying, how they can do it in a proper way?
Mm-hmm. That's a wonderful question, and I appreciate you asking that, because as a, you know, a lineage keeper, and as I said, very much a traditionalist, I mean, I also do contemporary art and dance and fusion, and it's not that I think tradition and lineage is the only way. It is one way, and I'm very clear with myself and with my students. This is Odissi, this is the tradition, this is how our guru designed it, and this is how we will continue to do it. And then there's the space of fusion. And yeah, as you said, there's a culture in belly dance, I think a bit to our detriment, that it's the culture of like the quick turnaround time of, okay, pay for a workshop, I'll learn a choreography, and then next week I'll go on stage, and that's what I paid for, so that's what I should get. I think that it's kind of shortchanging us in the belly dance world to have this very commercial outlook on dance, because dance is, I mean, I'm quite sure to say that dance is a life path. It's not a workshop. There's no you know, it's finally, it's beyond the technique. It's also how we live and how we present our art and how we present ourselves. So that's what you get by spending time with the teacher. And that's what I have gotten, as I said, learning in this Gurukul style in a very traditional manner of Guru. What Gurukul means is at the house of the Guru, living with the Guru. So as you said, not everyone can move to India and live with their guru for 20 years, but But we can seek out trainings that are a bit more holistic, is the word that I like to use, because the vision of art to me is very holistic. We need to read and educate ourselves as dancers. We need to know music theory. We need to know theories of choreography and stage and, you know, so many things. You know, taking care of the body, so our understanding of anatomy and kinesiology, all these things kind of fit together in a very holistic way for me. The mind, body, spirit of the dancer. I want to create a performance that nurtures someone intellectually, emotionally, and spiritually, and entertains them. So that can be done if we view the training process as a holistic experience. And I try to create my training programs with that in mind. You know, I don't mean to plug myself, but I'm just saying, like, my solution to that question, because I think it's important. And I enjoy taking a workshop here and there for inspiration, but I don't get full satisfaction from that quick workshop scenario. I kind of feel sometimes like, oh, I have to steal this move, or I'm like stealing this move, and this kind of, because I don't know where this move really came from, and I haven't lived with that move for a while. So it impresses on me very shallowly. And for sure, I've picked up some great dance moves from workshop, but I enjoy going to more residential trainings. Like, I've gone to Egypt and studied, but staying in Egypt and studying day after day after day and kind of going through a process with the teachers, or having, you know, experiences with teachers in more residential type festivals or retreats. Those are the trainings that have really changed the direction of my dance. And so I seek those out, and that's the kind of experiences that I try to create. Workshops are nice too. People can just get a taste of your work. But I, in the summers, I have a retreat center in Greece where I do residential trainings. This year we're hosting Zoe Jakes, and every year I do my residential trainings in Indian fusion belly dance and Odissi, and we host other teachers. But the concept is again, like the Gurukul concept, is to live with your teacher, spend time, share meals with your teacher, and kind of get deeper into the vision of their art. And then of course, my school in India, we do longer trainings that are, you know, like month by month, or just longer training programs. And I created, actually from this need, this feeling very disappointed and frustrated with what I saw developing out there. There was a trend that popped up, I don't know, several years ago about Indian fusion belly dance. And I kind of saw where it was going, and it made me sad because I felt it was just really trivializing Indian dance. And I think it could be done in a more intentional way. So my solution to that was to create Indian Fusion Formation, which is my training program, where it's not just training in technique and dance vocabulary, but we also have theory class where we talk about the ethics behind it or the history. We talk about anatomy of the dancer's body, but also from a perspective of Ayurveda and yoga, and also, you know, kinesiology and medical studies. So I try to present a holistic vision that also transforms the dancer's ethos around the dance, not just transforming their hands into beautiful positions, but like, why is the hand in that position, and all the why behind the choices that we make in art.
And your retreat in Greece and this Indian fusion formation program in India, are they open for any level of dancers? So let's say someone who comes from belly dance background, or do you have any sort of requirements that dancers need to have some previous, I don't know, knowledge, experience, training in one or another dance style for certain, I don't know, number of years or something like that?
Good question. So in Indian fusion formation level one, we call it level one, but it's not for really a beginning dancer. It's ideal for a belly dancer who's trained at least 2 years. If someone has a strong Indian dance background, they're already a few steps into the process. It's not what I didn't want to do in this program is break down basic belly dance movement. I have a preliminary an online course that people can do to kind of come into what I consider my fundamental belly dance vocabulary. But what I'm really interested in working with people on is the fusion part. Like what is it from Indian dance that is respectful to integrate or intelligent, and I'm not trying to be the fusion police, but like I certainly have learned from my gurus. There's some things you just don't do, and and there's a language in our dance that all the mudras have an extensive meaning and language and kind of like codes of conduct around the movement and a sensibility. We have ancient texts on dance from over 3,000 years ago that where these dance movements have been codified. So if someone hasn't studied that or researched that, they don't really know the full potential of the movement and also, where it might be appropriate to use and where it wouldn't be appropriate or sensible to use. So my interest is to help people find what essence can we extract, what essence can we be inspired from? Because if we think about it like making a perfume, there's like, okay, we're taking sandalwood from India. That scent of sandalwood is so associated with India. But what does it blend nicely with? And what would it not blend nicely with? That's the part that I find interesting. So, long answer to your simple question, 2 years of belly dance experience required.
No, that's good to know. I also guess that one of the trickiest points for dancers who are interested specifically in fusion would be also to know proper choice of music. How do you usually approach it when you prepare some fusion performance?
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, unfortunately, I have not yet found the gold mine of Indian fusion music. I really struggle with it. I feel like a lot of kind of fusion music that integrates Indian music, obviously the musician doesn't know anything about Indian music because they just kind of take a sitar and layer some down tempo beat on top of it. But there's so many like rhythmic structures that we have in Indian music that would sound amazing and you could replicate electronically. It doesn't have to be played on a traditional drum. So I kind of suffer with not having a lot of access. There's just not Indian fusion music that I really feel satisfied with. But I guess I like Indian music. I live in India. I do Indian dance all day. So I love the mood that Indian classical music puts me in, especially Hindustani North Indian music and the long, luxurious alaps, we call it, the long arrhythmic kind of musical introduction. It's like a taksim in Arabic music. So kind of the languidness of the music I really enjoy. But now, on a belly dance stage, people are certainly looking for some more loud electronic kind of sounds that pop out. So I really love like myself when I'm dancing Indian fusion for myself, by myself, I take really long pieces of music and I luxuriate in them. That's what I enjoy to do. But I realize that on a stage, you need to kind of condense everything down. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot to say about the music, but ultimately, it's your personal choice. Yeah.
I was just curious because I assume it probably would not be appropriate to take classical, I don't know, Odyssey song and just do a fusion to it. It still needs to be some fusion in the music elements too.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you would want to do fusion on an Indian, I mean, on an Odissi song. It wouldn't, I don't think it would attract you in that way. Odissi music is very specific. Something I would say is more like kind of obviously detrimental is the costuming. Like, I feel very uncomfortable when people take elements of the Odissi costume and directly take it, cut and paste, and then do belly dance in it because we earn the right to be able to wear that costume. And our guru teaches us how to put the costume on. We don't just go to a shop and buy an Odissi dress and put it on ourselves. We are, you know, it's like in karate, you don't just put a black belt on, you wait till your teacher gives you the black belt. So that's very awkward because I think people sometimes don't realize that there's a lineage tradition with that. So that's a little bit more of an obvious example. Musically, yeah, I don't think you would want to take an Odissi song, but as far as I know, I feel uncomfortable when people use really like Vedic mantra chanting, or you know, like you wouldn't belly dance on the recitation of the Quran, you know, in the same way, like very, very religious chanting is a bit out of place with a belly dance piece, but the music is quite open, I would say, besides that.
I see, I see. Well, I also have a question for those people who are, for different reasons, maybe not able to travel, or at least not able to travel anytime soon to Greece or to India. Is there any options to study from you in online format?
Yeah, I mean, we all got really excited with that during the pandemic, and I noticed things have slowed down, but I do pop up every now and then with an online workshop. And if people join my newsletter, maybe I can share the link with you. They can sign up for the newsletter, and I will let people know when I'm offering an online live workshop. And then I also have on my website, I have a library of courses that we made during the pandemic. So I have actually Odissi courses. I have some belly dance courses that people can sign up and rent by the month. And yeah, and then I have some other workshops coming up. We have the Fusion Festival in Germany this year and in Athens, Greece. So a couple events that we'll post on my website.
Well, I definitely include links to your resources, to your website, social media, and newsletter in the show notes to this episode. So for all our listeners, it will be very easy to connect. Just go there, click the link, and subscribe to both newsletter and social media. And by the way, do you have the dates for your own like events, like Indian fusion formation or retreat in Greece? Like the next events that people are maybe able to plan their trips, maybe put on calendars right now while listening to us and subscribe and register.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are starting, if anyone is in India and wants to join Indian Fusion Formation Level 1, we are starting April 14th to the 20th. And so there's the last chance to register for that. And then in Greece, we have a whole summer schedule of different trainings, and my trainings. I have an open level Indian fusion retreat, which is August 4th to the 8th. And then I have Odissi summer training, which is August 14th to 21st.
Well, hopefully, you will see a lot of our listeners at those events. And I encourage everyone to come in and talk to Colleen and let her know where you discovered about the events. I'm sure some people would love to go and attend them. Thank you so much for this conversation. This hour just went so quickly. I still want to ask you so many things, and I know we only scratched the surface of what was going on in your dance life, what is going on right now. So I hope at some point you'll agree for part two continuation to continue this conversation. But anyway, I really enjoyed our today's chat, and thank you so much for giving so much insights into your own dance experience and clarifying so many things about Indian dance styles, about Odissi, about fusion between Indian styles and ballet dance. I'm pretty sure it gave a lot of clarity, or a little bit, at least a little bit more understanding for our audience, for listeners, definitely for me. It did, and hopefully inspired to explore and keep growing and keep learning even further for all dancers.
Thank you. Thanks for having me and for having this discussion.
So, to close up our discussion as a summary, I have one final question for you, and this is our traditional question. I ask it at the end of the very every interview, regardless of what we talked during our conversation. And the question
Okay.
is usually about belly dance, which
Okay.
I'm curious to apply to you too. So I may rephrase it a little bit, or I may add little clarifications, but I'm really curious to know about your sort of insights or your reply. So the question is, what makes you fall in love with belly dance again and again? So you keep doing it for so many years. And the reason why I'm also asking you specifically about belly dance, not rephrasing it to Odissi or Indian styles, is because you do ballet, you still do ballet dance, even despite your main focus, your main passion went into like exploring Indian dance culture. But I'm curious to know why you do ballet dance, and it's not necessarily about the traditional, I don't know, Egyptian style. Like, if you feel more talking about fusion style, like, that's totally fine, whatever calls to you, but I'm curious to know why you still fall in love with that belly dance aspect of your activities, and you keep doing it for so many years.
It's a great question. I guess I'll just answer a bit stream of consciousness because the first thing that popped into my mind was the spine. My spine, as I said, this word luxuriate, the flow through my spine, this heavy, watery pelvic movement. The earthiness, that inherent femininity, earthy femininity, and how my body sings when I allow it to move that way. And then I would also say the music, Arabic music, which I don't often perform on, but every time I dance to Arabic music, it reminds me that I have to do this dance. I have to stay connected because there's something so deep and so earthy, and soulful and spiritual, about the music and how it makes the body move, that I just find satisfies me more than any other style of dance.
This episode was brought to you by the Yana Dance Club, bringing more consistency and more fun into your dance training online. Check it out at yanadanceclub.com, direct link in the show notes. And before you leave, don't forget to screenshot this episode and share it with your friends, as well as leave a review on iTunes or any other app you're using to listen to the show. The more people know about this podcast, the easier it is for me to bring even more awesome guests. Until next time, keep shimmying and keep dancing.